Interview with Aluwahere, Sir Richard, 19th of March, 1967.
Now, I'm thinking of that extract A.
Yes.
What your views on the subject are?
Well, I think in the reserve forest areas, naturally they have to get a permit to cut any timber they want. But there are certain village forest areas reserved for the benefit of the villagers themselves, which are under the control of the GA. And they often get a permit from the GA, who recommends through the Rata Mahatmya or the DR, the permit is given. As far as my experience went, I had really no complaints against the forest department's officials that they were victimizing them. I had no complaints. I can't remember it. But on the whole, when they were wanted a permit for timber, for building their houses, it was granted by the revenue officer or the recommended by the village headman and the normal channel. The Kachari gave the permit.
Was this timber from the village forest or the reserve forest?
Well, the reserve forest, it went to the forest department. And the headman or the Rata Mahatmya may have recommended. And if it came to the Kachari, we too would have said, well, please give this timber. And it may be that they had to go and get the timber from the underlings who put certain obstacles in their way, but I'm not prepared to confirm that. I had no complaints.
Did you feel that the extent of village forest was sufficient? Village forest.
Village forest. Mm-hmm. Well, certainly in the NCP, we have the other forest. We have no hitch at all. It really, I mean, the difficulties came in areas where there was estate areas opened up and where the forest area was very, very limited. In those areas, natural, there were difficulties. Now places, eastern province, north central province,
Northwestern
parts of it, plenty of forest areas.
And say that there was a village forest, would there be any timber in that forest which they could use for building purposes?
Oh, yes. For village needs, yes.
In which case they didn't even need a permit for that?
No, they had to get the permit from the Kachari.
Mm-hmm. Was it a slow process?
Well, very difficult for us to say that, because when we went on circuit, now when I went on circuit, I always asked the villagers who were there. Now if you have anything to say, this is the time to say it. I can't come round daily, and when I come on circuit, I should like you to come forward bold and tell your difficulty. Well, on those occasions, they very often come and say, sir, we find it difficult to get so and so. Well, I put it right. I ask the people, what is the difficulty? Please explain it to me. And if the remedy was there, instant relief was given. Or if there was a recommendation to be made to the forest department or some other department, well, we did the needful.
And what about petitions? Wouldn't they bring complaints to light if there were any?
Oh yes, petitions too. Rather, and we of course had to send it to the RM or the other for a report. If the petition was given to us personally at one of our division days when we were on circuit, then we filled it and asked the RM or the DRO, whoever it was, well, what is this complaint? What's the trouble?
Can you recall many petitions and complaints on this score about victimization or difficulty of getting timber?
No. Can't remember.
That's very useful, because If there were a lot, it's likely that...
I remember it. And I would have taken special measures to see that they got the timber. The complaints were really about water irrigation department. That they did not supply the water as scheduled in the program. And that the irrigation officers were inclined to...
ask for bribes?
Yes.
Well, I think that about covers A. Rather than take B, I'll take C because that's connected with C first. Because that's connected with...
Where is C now?
C. Connected with... I think this is C. We can't see the mark.
Yes.
Connected with A, you see.
Mm-hmm. Well, as far as I know, really, the chena was given to the villager in the chena, in the areas reserved for chena cultivation. And the permit itself was free. As far as I know, no charges. I mean, in the NCP, in fact, when I was GA, I was very liberal. Because where you had the tank and sufficient paddy land available, the chena was essential for its existence. It was a necessary evil. It's true that the forest had to be denuded. But who was to live? Was it the forest or the human being? It was a tussle between the two. Who was to survive? The human being or the... forest.
Yes. What do you say about his statement that there have been brief periods during the past century when shifting cultivation has been officially prohibited altogether?
Depended on the GAs. Some of them are very strict and try to cut it down to a minimum.
Altogether?
Never altogether, no. To restrict giving the chain access. To encourage them to do some permanent cultivation.
This is within your experience and within your time in the civil service?
Oh yes. Oh yes.
There were GAs who did that?
There were complaints. Mm-hmm. And there were other GAs who were very liberal, who realized that this is necessary, particularly Mr. Freeman, H.R. Freeman. He was a great advocate of the rights of the NCP people for chain cultivation, despite the objections raised by the central government based on the Forest Department's reports.
Mm-hmm. Now he says here that one had to get permission from a village headman and a license before one cultivated even chena on the village land?
No, I don't think that. The chena cultivation was almost automatic during a particular season. I mean, they knew exactly the chain areas and they started the cultivation. And chain permit, they had to get the permit if it was crown land. If it was their own land, of course, no permit was necessary.
Now, he argues, I think this, taking the second paragraph, about this agronomist's point of view.
Yeah. Shifting cultivation would be to clear any particular piece of land. Very long interval, says they have to. At least 5-10 years.
Now he says that this, say this square is reserved for chena.
Yes.
And another square is prohibited, kept as forest or
that's
forest
right. purposes. That's right.
But therefore, because they are cultivating only this square, as time passes, the cycle gets shorter and shorter.
Yes.
And therefore there is greater erosion and greater denudation.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if you had the whole lot at spaced out, there will be less denudation. You see, including the forest. If you didn't have reserve forest, and if you let them chain it for a while,
that would have been impossible. There wouldn't be any timber left. You had to have reserves, particularly for you, to get the timber that was required for other purposes too. Building a house, you had to get a permit to get the timber, satin wood, various other kinds. You see, whenever you selected a chain, it was really land that was not old forest with valuable trees.
Does that mean the administrator or the villager?
Well, I mean, the administrator saw that land that was given was not valuable forest land.
Mm-hmm.
That it was volcano land. It was not devoid of valuable trees, but very few.
Mm-hmm.
It was more like the lantana.
Secondary
growth.
Mm-hmm. But then, as time went by, the cycle would get shorter and shorter, and according to the theory at least, the fertility of that plot of land would get less and less.
Once a chaina was cultivated, say this year, it won't be rechained for at least another 5 years. It won't be ready for rechaining. If there was water, well, you could get permanent crops in at once.
I think he's arguing that you should allow more than 5 years and have 25 years because the fertility would be, and therefore the produce will be greater.
No, it's only a haphazard way of getting the produce. It's not permanent.
Mm-hmm.
It's only seasonal. I mean, he doesn't get a regular income from that. He merely gets really for his food, which is, you know, kurakka, and incidentally various types of vegetables, goats, chili.
So what would you say about his theme that the real cause of the trouble is the government regulation rather than the fact of shifting cultivation?
I don't think government had to bring in regulations to restrict chaina cultivation if they wanted timber for other uses, valuable timber for other uses. They couldn't allow chaina cultivation ugly, because that would mean they would destroy the entire forest area. There won't be anything left.
By other users, you mean government's users or the villagers?
No, the middle classes. I mean, where are they going to get timber to build their houses? Your satin, your ebony for furniture, all had to come from those forest areas.
But in the NCP, in the case of some forests, was timber a marketable commodity? Could you extract?
Oh, very much so.
Mm-hmm.
Very much so. You have to get the permit and go and fell the trees. Satin, ebony.
But then the transport difficulties?
Well, I mean, that you had to overcome. Transport difficulties really at that stage were almost nil, because you had the lorry, you had the train, various other ways. And in the olden days, you had the cart, double block cart.
Well, that about exhausts that subject.
Now, you see, look at the number of houses that have been built in Kalakalam. All needed timber. It's true, some of it was imported teak from Burma. But most of it came really locally, particularly for furniture, like using jack, satin, ebony, nadu, Number of other varieties.
And didn't this timber also help the local village to some extent?
Well, if you wanted to build a house, yes. Mm.
Well, I would like to turn to B, page 2.
Yes. Yes.
Actually, it begins on page 1.
Yeah. Is this? She's a baby herself. Very good.
He said something about
suppose village communism was condemned in its own principle and it became the declared object to government to replace this primitive form of organization by a system of peasant proprietorships. Well, you see, it's the joint family system that prevailed, where the family jointly cultivated a particular paddy field. And at the end of it, the harvest was gathered and they shared the produce equally. That, as the family multiplied, naturally, the income or the produce became less. And the successive generations couldn't live. There wasn't the quantity or the produce necessary for them to make it worthwhile cultivating it jointly in that form. But joint family may have served a particular purpose during a particular time. It had to go with the commercialized system of economy.
Mm-hmm. But in your experience, for instance, did British administrators in the 1920s, for instance, ever use the term village communism? Can you recall it?
I don't want to, what do you mean by, I mean, we never call it village communism.
Yes, that's why I say I...
No, I never heard of it, not village communism. I mean, what we said is the village community had a joint family system. And that joint family earned and lived together.
But was it condemned as such by your superiors in the 20s?
Not condemned as such. It was an outmoded system. And they wanted to change.
You mean they? Was it D.S. and Nayakan crowd or the British officials?
Some British officials and even the when self-government came, men like Mr. D.S. and Nayakan naturally wanted people to have sufficient land individually to maintain them. I mean, the whole land development ordinance was framed for that purpose. Instead of fragmentation, so that each individual may have sufficient land for his survival or for his upkeep, put it that way. You see?
Mm-hmm. He goes further and says, official. Official policy was explicitly designed to favor the relatively wealthy peasant at the expense of his poorer neighbor.
Not during my experience. Not, of course, the estate plantations.
No,
but certainly.
But he's talking about
the village. In the village. I don't think that can be said. That the government tried to encourage it. No. At least, not as far as my experience.
So in proof of that, I find all this rather strange. He says, the theory being that the richer man must be ipso facto the more enterprising, and then says it was quite consistent with this policy that these crown lands were sold only in relatively large plots, so that the poor peasant was excluded from the market.
No, I can't agree with that. It may have been years and years ago, but with the system of government becoming liberal, that had to be abandoned. And greater care was paid to the village needs, to the villagers' needs, than the middle class or the rich, the upper classes.
I'm never quite sure about what period he's talking about in this paragraph, you see, but in support of the same point he says, in theory, no plot of crown land sold for use as rice land, could be less than a 5-acre block. So it would seem that he's referring to the 1930s.
Yeah, he's really referring to the system brought under the Land Development Ordinance, where you were given so many acres of mud land and so many acres of high land.
But was
the individual?
Was that with the express purpose of helping the richer peasant?
Not richer person, helping the actual villager. In fact, the poorer villages, there was a land cutchery held. And the man who had the land was given the land. And the man who had the land did not get the land. You must understand, once the land development scheme, ordinance came into operation, the poorer villager got the land in preference to the richer villager. If a man had 2 acres and the other man had nothing, well, the man who had no land was given the preference. And every land cutchery.
That's very interesting, because I read the land manual.
Yeah.
And they give this category and they say A category, man with no land.
That's right.
B, man with only little land but not sufficient to live.
To meeting.
And C, the middle class.
Yes, middle.
But that specifically says that it's not necessary to choose A in preference of B, if B is a better cultivator.
Well, you couldn't, dependent on what, I mean, when we gave land and we found that there was a chap who was a better cultivator than his neighbor, we naturally encouraged the better cultivator by possibly giving him more land, or trying to cancel the other man's permit and saying, well, you get out, you're useless.
But in practice, wouldn't it be correct to say that the landless were favored?
Oh, that is when the liberal form of government came into operation. Definitely, the landless was given the preference to the land, to the middle class and the people who had land.
So there was then, in your experience, no attempt on the part of DSNAC and Brain and others to favour the peasant with more capital?
No, never. Definitely not. Mm-hmm.
There's another point he makes here. These farms which you are giving out was on an individual basis. Then he, if you read this last, this is better, the last para here, together with the footnote, he criticizes that, you see.
What is it now? As far as my experience with it, at a land cutchery, each villager was keen to get land. I mean, he did not want land to be shared with others. He preferred land to be given to him individually, so that he could cultivate it and have sufficient means for his family, himself and his children. I mean, there was no protest from the villager for applying this system, as far as I know. He did not want this joint family system where several parties owned one piece of land and none did the work.
That's very interesting. And in fact, one can ask whether the traditional system was practicable in new circumstances, especially in colonization.
Impossible. Mm-hmm. Impossible. And we discovered it. There's no question about it. The colonization scheme really was meant to make the individual villager self-sufficient and self-supporting. The whole system, even today, works in that form. And it depended on the individual who had the enterprise. He started the cultivation, started other business, and added to his income. And some of them became really rich. It depended very much on the individual.
And also his idea here, implicit there, that in the traditional system there was a lot of communal harmony, and also that, I mean, it was tightly communal. Isn't that incorrect? Because there was a lot of individualism within that communal system, wasn't there? In the sense that sharing out was individual.
Yes, that's right.
The panguas were individual.
Yes, that's right. You see, as I told you, it's a system that had that is outmoded. It may have served a particular period of particular period of time. Once the money values came into the picture and modern commercial organization, modern commerce, then the system had to go.
Well, I'd like to jump to D on page...
It's very difficult to... Page...
Next one. Here. That's about the land development ordinance and Senanayake.
Mm-hmm. I disagree with this. The outright sale of freehold lands had been intended to encourage the small holder capitalists. Never.
Mm-hmm.
The new emphasis was on preserving the peasantry from exploitation. That is correct. But the landless got always preference. There was no effort to create the small holder capitalist.
And he's saying the previous system before Senanayake intended to encourage. Did that happen?
That may have been so. I mean, he had the means
to bind them.
Bind them.
But intention? Did government?
Actually, intent, I don't think government intended to pauperize the villager. But the man who had the money naturally bought the land. And he established himself as a small capitalist.
But another interesting fact or point on page 2, a new socialistic mode. Would you say that was correct of Brain and Deer?
Socialistic?
A new socialistic mode.
S- socialism in that way has to be defined. If it meant that have-nots should have something in preference to the haves, yes. I mean, the whole system really was geared to provide the landless land, sufficient land for their maintenance, and to preserve what crown land was available for the benefit of the villager rather than the capitalist. Because the capitalist had further business by then. The large estate owners and people, and there was hardly any crown land left for the benefit of the villager. And naturally, what was left had to be given to the landless. Mm-hmm. And the whole idea of the land development ordinance was that.
Was it also meant to ease population pressure in other areas?
Colonization.
Oh, that's
different. Obviously. Now take Min area and these places. I mean, they were really opened up so that the thickly populated areas may be divested of the surplus and sent to the colonies.
This second paragraph, it was definitely intended, and then that exploited serfs point.
Yes, that now, it was definitely
intended.
It is definitely intended that these new regulations operate to the disadvantage of the owner of the freehold land, now began to be thought of as a wealthy parasite, absentee landlord. That may be true. That's true. I mean, the man who owned that land and who was not resident there and who exploited village labor was certainly considered to be a parasite. Indirectly.
But he implies that was not true.
Pardon?
He implies, the way he writes, he implies that this fellow was, that this was not always so, that the landlords were not necessarily parasites, absent.
Depends. Yeah. Depended on the landlord. I mean, now for instance, my own family, which gave land to be cultivated to the cultivators. Well, they spent half shares. Half share we got and a half share they got. It was really the ancient system, customary system of dividing their produce. The cultivator gets half and the landlord gets half. And certain landlords gave the seed paddy too from their share.
He goes on to say, in terms of the oversimplified categories of popular politics, all owners of freehold land became tyrannous rent collectors, while all landless peasants were ipso facto virtuous and exploited serfs.
I mean, politically, certainly, from platforms, they had to adopt that attitude if they wanted the popular vote. After all, the 75% and 90% of the vote really came from the village, which villager who did not own the large acres of land, who were not really rich, or who were not really middle class, even well-to-do. Even today, the emphasis is on that, isn't that so? That the common man must be looked after. What do they mean by the common man? That the average man, who's a citizen of the country, should have the wherewithal in preference to the large landlords and the estate owners and the companies.
Going a bit further, in Anuradhapura district, what term did the villagers adopt to describe this LDO land? Baduidam, Anduidam
is all right. Andue Baduidam, which ultimately went to them after a particular period of time if they had carried out the terms in the agreement. I mean, what I gave Appuhami today, 2 acres, if he, after 3 years, had cultivated the land in terms of the agreement, we gave him the permanent permit to own the land.
Did they realize this?
Oh, yes, they realized it very much. Very much. In the colonization areas, particularly. I mean, the slacker who had done nothing could be ejected. And we did so in certain cases. Cancelled his permit.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of this third paragraph here, certain defects?
Badu Inam, yes. I mean, those are exceptions where the system really was not administered in the spirit in which it should have been administered. These are individual abuses on the part of possibly headmen or on the part of other officials. But you must understand, the land kachari was held by the government agent himself. Mm-hmm. And the whole village was present. And if a headman tried to put in a man who had the land forward, the villagers would at once start laughing, smiling. Mm-hmm. And some of them even will get up and say, "Emni hara hungak idan thiyena one hambene oya pawulata habawata idan thiyena one." They would say that. I don't think the system was extensively abused in the form he describes.
And it's funny that the way he describes it, one would think that the GA asked for list and sat in his office and gave...
Never.
That never happened. I wonder how he got...
I went there myself and the land kachari was held by me or by my assistant. And all the village was there. And they agreed. We wish to ask them, "Well, are you satisfied with the land capture? Any complaints?" And even after we left, if there was abuse, they sent a petition, "Sir, this land was given to so and so, and these are the facts. Please check up."
And anyway, if there was land available, it does not matter if the son-in-law of the richest man in the village got a plot.
Got a plot. Depended really on what the father-in-law had. Mm-hmm. If he found that the father-in-law had 2 daughters and they had, say, 100 acres or 25 acres, each could get 12, well, he wouldn't get the land. The land would go to someone else. Mm-hmm. Depended on the merit of the case.
Taking his other criticism, this business of a nominated heir, he criticized in his other paragraph, he says that this was well intended, but it conflicts radically with the ordinary principles of Sinhalese land inheritance. And therefore, I think he doesn't make the point here, but later on he says that it was opposed and therefore difficult to apply.
I saw no difficulty myself. I experienced that. In fact, when we said you had to nominate one person. We explained to them why it was that we did not want fragmentation to start again and to pauperize. I said, well, if you have 5 sons, well, we hope to give all the 5 some land, if they're landless.
But I have summative evidence today, you know, from other sources, that sometimes a father nominates one, but this leads to real serious family disputes, because another...
That's possible. That why did you nominate so-and-so and not me? Because they hadn't that idea that the eldest son should be the owner. Mm-hmm. They said, no, we are all sons. And we ought to have all got a share of what you got.
And also that de facto sometimes they really divide the land. They nominate one, but...
Oh, that may help. Unauthorized division on their own. That you couldn't prevent, really. But all practical purposes, we felt, well, he's the owner of the land. If he chooses to divide and give the produce to his brothers, well, we have no choice. Very difficult for us to prevent it.
But actually, I'd like to turn back to the sort of previous times and say to your knowledge of Aliwehara village and take the old system where they divided the land. Even under that system, weren't there family disputes? Ultimately, when it came to, it became so partitioned.
Yes. Oh, definitely. I mean, family disputes about the share you got, about the produce you got. There was that, source of trouble. But mind you, once the old economy, it really worked under a particular system, social system and an economy. When that economy changed and the Western system came in, that created all the trouble. I mean, the dissatisfaction arose then, when money was really the criterion of your prestige and your position in the village.
He also raises as a defect the fact that villagers couldn't borrow money on the land, and therefore they didn't like this form of tenure. Did you?
Oh, yes, naturally. I mean, they couldn't borrow money on that.
It was stipulated?
Yes, it was stipulated. They couldn't alienate it. And naturally, possibly, the lender wouldn't give the money on that land. And really, we wanted to discourage it getting rid of the land, or mortgage.
Because they will lose it.
Yes. That's why we stipulated that you can't sell or mortgage. Mm-hmm.
But in preventing one evil, weren't you creating another in the sense that land is a security and is a form of capital which they couldn't utilize, in the sense that they couldn't get money capital to develop that plot?
No, but they got a subsidy from government. Mm-hmm. What do you mean?
Yes, I see.
Absolutely. And he got every help from government to develop his land. To start with, the allowance is very niggardly. But as time went on, it became ample. He got money to build the house. He got money to clear the proper jungle. Then he was able to get seed paddy, plants, various things like that.
Well, this is his last comment later on, you see, about the whole two different systems.
has brought to the social dissension. What exactly do they mean by this?